Well, good morning. Good to see you. I think you can hear me now all right, which is helpful. Do find a Bible, whether it's near you, beside you. Turn back to Amos chapter 6. This is where we're going this morning in our series on Amos. Like all of our Sunday morning series in Amos, it's really helpful for me as I teach through some of these slightly more complicated Old Testament passages for you to have it open in front of you so you can see where we're going and what we're talking about. Now, I suspect, like me, many of you followed some of the news stories of this last week. It's been quite a mixture of stories, hasn't it? Another horrible terror attack in New York, which we followed earlier in the week. Then there was what remains possibly of the Catalonian government. I think half of the people in this photograph are now in prison somewhere. And then we heard about various resignations from government and ministers and inappropriate behavior, and who knows where that's going to go over these next few weeks and what else is going to come to light. And then there was a hero this week, wasn't there? He managed to delete a Twitter account belonging to Donald Trump. I believe it only lasted about a few minutes. But I guess, like me, you've probably followed some of the stories that have been going on this week and some of the stories that you will have seen in the news. And it's interesting, isn't it, how our news stories kind of compete for our attention. Big headlines and various forms of getting those pieces of information into our homes and our houses and onto our mobile devices. Amos did not have such things available to him. He didn't have social media. He didn't have a newspaper that he could go to. He didn't go somewhere where he can say, I need this big headline splashed out so that people can hear the message that I've got to bring. So he reverted to something which was much more imaginative. And so if you've been with us over these recent Sunday mornings, you will know, even if you flick back to Amos chapter 1, that Amos engages in some very imaginative ways of grabbing his audience's attention. He finds other ways of putting a big headline in front of people. So he finds his way from the southern kingdom of Judah to the northern kingdom of Israel and to Samaria and probably into one of the market squares where people gathered to hear news and begins to preach. And he begins to preach in a very curious way. He brings a message of judgment from God. And as he begins to preach, he does it by engaging his audience, by saying to them, do you know what? He says, God's judgment's going to come to your neighbours. It's going to come to the neighbouring nations. It's going to come to those people who've given you a really hard time for so many years. And you can almost imagine people say, yeah, bring it on, Amos. It's about time these people around us had a sense of accountability and they stopped treating us in the way that they're treating us. And so Amos made his way around the various nations that surrounded Israel and Judah. And I suspect by the time he got to the end, he had quite a crowd listening to him, almost saying, bring it on, Amos. Preach it, brother. Preach it. And just as he had people in his hand, he says, by the way, judgment's coming to Israel. Judgment's coming to Judah. And that really smacked that news headline right in a way that people could hear it and understand it. But of course, we've been reading over the last few weeks, if you look at Amos, we begin to realize that actually people are not listening to this message, are they? And the questions we're going to be thinking about this morning is, why is it that they cannot hear this message from God? What is it about these people? But Amos doesn't give up, because this message is really burning in his heart. So when he comes to chapter 4, he finds another way of engaging people. So he's back in the market square, possibly, and he thinks, well, how can I sort of grab people again? So he begins by addressing the Samaritan elite women who live this lovely, lavish lifestyle and said, you cows of Bashan. That would have caught people's attention, I suspect. Certainly would today. He was comparing the lavish Samaritan women and their lifestyle to cows in the neighbouring area of Bashan, who were wonderful, beautiful animals, actually. But he grabs their attention, doesn't he? He doesn't need the internet. He doesn't need a local newspaper to do it. But he doesn't stop at that, because when it comes to chapter 4 and verse 4, if you have it open in front of you, he kind of mimics a kind of call to worship that goes on, in where people would have been familiar to hear this call to worship. Come and worship in Bethel. Come and worship in Gilgal. Chapter 4, verse 4. And then he says this, as he uses this familiar way of calling people to worship, he says, come and worship and come and sin. It'd be like Chris standing here this morning and saying, welcome to Crofton Baptist Church this morning. Welcome to worship. Welcome to worship. Welcome to worship and come and sin. That will catch your attention, wouldn't it? Chris stood here this morning and said that to you. And we've learned, haven't we, that God is not pleased with our worship. They're going through the motions. They're just pretending. But again, Amos finds these really imaginative ways of grabbing people's attention. If you're here a couple of weeks ago, when we got to chapter 5, we find that Amos is back again in the market square, and he's standing in front of people, and this time he begins to announce the funeral of the nation. It would be like me standing here on a Sunday morning, and the first thing that I say to you is, someone that we love has died. Someone precious. Someone irreplaceable. You would immediately prick up your ears, wouldn't you, if I said that this morning? That's what Amos does. Except Amos is talking about the death of the nation of Israel. Look at chapter 5 and verse 1. Verse 2, fallen is virgin Israel, never to rise again, deserted in her own land with no one to lift her up. Amos has tried everything that he possibly can to grab the attention of the nation of Israel and say, God has a message that you need to hear. And he has tried everything that he can. And I've described this morning as living under a cloud as we come to Amos chapter 6. You see, what is going on here that people cannot hear what God is saying? Why is it that they have become so spiritually deaf? How is it that they seem to be going around? Probably halfway through Amos's ministry at this stage, it's possibly 7, 8, 9 months, Amos has been standing there with these messages, using every imaginative way that he could. And it's like God's people are going around with their fingers stuck in their ears. Now, I don't know about you, but when I come to this point of Amos, I'm thinking, how can that be? How is it that God's people can reach that point? You don't find yourself asking that question. How is it that they cannot hear what Amos is saying? How they can't hear God's message to them? What's going on that they cannot hear? How can they reach a place where it seems that everything that Amos says and every means of communication that Amos uses just seems to bounce off them? And here's a more serious question for us this morning. If it can happen to them, can it happen to us? That really brings this home to us, doesn't it? It's very easy for us to look at them over there and think, oh, ridiculous, stupid. How can they hear what God was saying? And actually that we find ourselves in exactly the same place. That's the challenge of Amos chapter 6 this morning. And let me show you why they got to that point. Look at chapter 6 and verse 1 and you'll see exactly what I mean. Here it is on the screen. Amos stands again and says, woe to you who are complacent in Zion and to you who feel secure on Mount Samaria. There's the answer to the question. It is, on one level, as simple as that. That's why they're going around with their fingers in their ears. That's why this message is bouncing off them, because they have become complacent. And they are at ease with themselves. And as we're going to see this morning, they have developed a false sense of security, which allows the message which God has for his people to bounce off them. Just doesn't go any further. So we're going to unpack this passage this morning, Amos chapter 6, because what Amos goes on to do in this passage, he shows us very, very clearly how it is possible for us to end up like the people of God in Amos chapter 6, as complacent people who are dependent on our own devices and our own strengths and our own abilities, and we build our security all around ourselves rather than our relationship with God. So that's the challenge of this passage this morning. I have really felt the weight of this passage this week. This is a difficult passage to preach. Not because it's difficult to understand, but because it's difficult for us to hear it being applied this morning. So as I preach this morning, I preach it as somebody who has preached it to myself this week. And I really feel the weight of this passage. I really think God has something to say to us this morning through this passage. So come with me, will you, into Amos chapter 6. Let's see how Amos deals with this horrible, complacent, settled sense of false security that's going on. There's a number of things I want you to notice. Firstly, that their security is found in their own strengths and in their own abilities. Look at verses 1 and 2. Verse 1 tells us there is ease in Zion, in Jerusalem. There's a sense of security in Samaria. There had been a sense of great military victories that had just taken place in recent years. And so it had led them to become complacent in their sense of security. They felt they could look after themselves, and they were blind to the growing threat of the Assyrians, whom Amos keeps saying are coming to invade your country. Their success, their self-belief is expressed very well. Gone out of my mind. How it was read this morning was brilliant. Verse 13. So I'm getting confused with Helen Amos and you see, Chris, you haven't helped me this morning here. Verse 13, here's the answer. Did we not complete these military victories in our own strength? You see what's going on here? Did we not take Carnon by our own strength? We did it. We achieved it. Aren't we great? And as a result, it wasn't long before they started to find their sense of security in their own abilities rather than in their relationship with God. And so Amos begins here in chapter 1 by challenging the corridors of power, both in the south and in the north. Woe to you, he says, you notable men of the foremost nation to whom Israel come. Verse 2 is a little bit difficult to understand because it's hard to say who's actually saying verse 2, but I've come to the conclusion, actually, this is what the notable leaders in Israel were saying. That they were kind of deflecting people away from some of the major issues, the major challenges of Amos, by saying, just go and have a look at the other nations around you and recognize how well off you really are. It's a pretty good technique, isn't it, when we find ourselves challenged, is to kind of deflect it away somewhere else. Seems what's going on in verse 2, that they're saying something like this: go and see Calneh and look at their problem. Go to Hamath and you will see that you've never had it so good. Are they better off than your two kingdoms put together? Verse 2. Is their land larger than yours? Go to Gath and Philistia and you will realize just how lucky you are to be born in our nation. Aren't we great? We are the best. We're top dog. And so they boosted the heart of the nation by pointing people to their military success, by comparing themselves to other people around them who were less successful, and firmly placing the security of the nation in their own strengths and in their own abilities. They said, we are great, we can do it. Verse 13, did we not do it in our own strength? Scores the underline, doesn't it? And in their complacency, they have ended up in a place where they have more faith in themselves than they do in God. It's part of the challenge of this chapter, actually. No wonder they couldn't hear what God was saying to them. So Amos, as ever, will not let that sit. He challenges that sense of security in verses 12 and 13 by demolishing their sense of pride and their sense of false security by taking what is a fairly typical proverb to make the point. He points out something that's really futile. Look at verse 12. He says, do horses run along rocky crags? Well, of course they don't. They can't. Do you take your oxen up to the top of the mountain and try and plow over the rocks and the stones? Of course you don't. It's futile. Why would you do that? And yet it seems to be that Amos is saying, you are trying to run your nation in your own strength and in your own abilities, and yet you are turning righteousness, verse 12, into bitterness, and you are turning justice into poison. You see what Amos is saying here? He says you can't divert people's attention from what's really going on by pointing to these hollow victories. You rejoice in your own conquests in verse 13. You put your own military successes down to your own achievements. It's really interesting to notice that the Hebrew word for Lodabar, one of the places which they captured, actually means nothing. I don't think that was lost on Amos as he exposed the nature of their false security. So the judgment of God falls. Verse 8. God swears by his own name. He says, I abhor the pride of Jacob. I hate it. Hate complacency amongst my people. Verse 14. I will stir up a nation against you, O house of Israel, that will oppress you all the way. So, firstly, Amos exposes this sense of false security that has built up, where they're sort of sitting around saying, do you know what, we're the best, we're the greatest. Look at our military conquests. We can do this in our own strength. We have more faith in ourselves than we do in God. Dangerous place to get to. Secondly, verse 3, their security was based on living with no thought for the future at all. Look at the beginning of verse 3. You put off the evil day. In other words, live for today. Don't worry about what you're hearing from Amos. Just stick your head in the sand. Don't worry. It will never happen. That's what complacency does. It says, doesn't really matter. Just doesn't really matter that much. It lulls us into a false sense of security. It's like an ostrich sticking its head in the sand. It's what complacency does. Amos, this is nonsense. Don't believe it, everybody. Everything's under control. We're in charge. Every day and in every way, our nation is getting better and better. Repeat, repeat, repeat. And that kind of approach has always worked, hasn't it? Because a soothing lie is much more preferable to a disturbing truth. And it's amazing how far we are willing to go sometimes to convince ourselves that this talk of God's judgment cannot possibly be true. God's a God of love, isn't he? How could he be a God of judgment? We saw back in chapter 5, where God's people had convinced themselves that they could hide from God. They convinced themselves that God couldn't see them through the pretense of their worship. Just glance back to the end of chapter 5 and verse 23, and God says, "Away with the noise of your songs. I'm not going to listen to your music. It's just a sham. You're just pretending." The Bible has a way, hasn't it, of bringing us face to face with reality. Sometimes we find that really uncomfortable. It brings us face to face with the truth about ourselves. It brings us face to face with the truth about our world. There is a day that is coming when we will give account of our lives to Jesus Christ. It is coming. And for God's people here in chapter 6, that day of accountability was being brought closer because of their stubborn disobedience and their settled complacency. And just 30 years later, this prophecy of Amos came true. The nation of Assyria swept through into the northern kingdom of Israel and obliterated them. So Amos says in verse 3, "You put off the evil day. You think you can stick your neck in the sand. You think you can just sort of settle in your complacency and think this will never happen." He says, all you're doing, verse 3, is putting off a day of judgment that is going to come whether you like it or not. So can you see what's going on in this passage? Can you see how the people of God have shifted in their thinking? They have substituted their faith in God for faith in themselves. That's a very, very dangerous place to end up. They had reached that point where they thought, do you know what, in our relationship with God, it doesn't really matter anymore. So it doesn't really matter how we worship. It doesn't really matter whether we're in church or not. It doesn't really matter whether we take our faith in God seriously. I mean, let's just live for the present. That's what complacency does. Why bother? It'd be a bit like me this morning saying, well, standing up in front of you this morning and saying, well, I don't think we'll bother preaching this morning. I think we'll just sing another song and go home. That's what complacency looks like. And thirdly, in this passage, we discover with Amos's help that their security is based on their material lifestyle and possessions. And here it starts to get a bit close to us. A picture painted in verses 4 to 6 in chapter 6 is a picture of an extravagant feast where God's people wined and dined and were completely oblivious to any threats of exile. Amos paints a picture of a complacent, indulgent lifestyle. We can do no better than read it. Chapter 6, verse 4. "You lie on beds inlaid with ivory, and you lounge on your couches. You dine on choice lambs and fatted calves. You strum away on your harps like David. You improvise on your musical instruments. You drink wine by the bowlful, and you use the finest of lotions. And you have no concern for your nation." And describing the lifestyle of those who had plenty, insulated from the miseries of the poor and the exploited in their society. Here's a group of people who felt completely secure. In fact, they couldn't care less what was happening outside of their own community. And they had no thought of grieving over the nation of Israel. Now, if we know ourselves well enough, then we should really be able to admit that possessions and lifestyles have a habit of insulating us from reality. They create a false sense of security. They have a real tendency of making us feel more secure in ourselves, don't they? They have a habit of insulating us from the world around us. And here in this passage, it is clear that materialistic lifestyles and possessions have contributed to this sense of complacency. They were comfortable. They were at ease. They've become so blinded by their own prosperity that they cannot see that their nation is doomed in verse 7. And God says, because of that, you will be the first people to go into exile. And verses 9 and 10 spell out that sense of impending destruction, don't they? End of verse 10, "Hush, we must not mention the name of the Lord." In verses 9 and 10, Amos looks like he's painting a scene which describes a population that's going to be reduced to the point of extinction. And in verse 11, it's almost as if Amos tries again to kind of rattle them out of their complacency. He says, don't you realize that the judgment of God is coming and the great houses and the small houses will be smashed? The rich and the poor will be judged by God. And the fate is sealed by God himself in verse 14. Look what verse 14 says. For the Lord God Almighty declares, I will stir up a nation against you. This is God speaking. And so Amos exposes the face of true complacency in this chapter, doesn't he? And my heart's experienced a certain sense of heaviness as I've worked my way through this passage this week. As I've thought about my own life and how this passage applies to me, I found myself really challenged this week. Because Amos shows us what complacency really looks like here. It's not a pretty sight, is it? And like me, maybe some of you here this morning feel the weight of God's word. How does this apply to us this morning? That's the kind of critical bit, really, isn't it? How do we sort of move from Amos chapter 6 and move ourselves into today and our community of faith here at Crofton Baptist Church? What does Amos 6 mean for you and me today? Well, there are two things that we need to do. Firstly, we need to remember, actually, that God is keeping his promises to his people. In Deuteronomy, God said to his people, if you remain faithful to me, I'll remain faithful to you. But if you break faith with me, there will be consequences. And for years and years and years and years, God has warned his people. This is not a sudden judgment. God has been incredibly compassionate with his people. And the second thing that we need to do is we need to come through the New Testament as we come to apply this morning. We keep coming back to 1 Corinthians chapter 10. It really helps us. It says that these things that are written here in Amos chapter 6 for us this morning about complacency are there for our example. They are there for us to learn from. They are there to instruct us. They are there to challenge our pride. If anybody who thinks they stand, just take heed. And in many ways, the chapters, the application, the challenges, the teaching points fall very naturally into this passage this morning. Here's the first one. The complacency is a sin against God. Look back at chapter 6 and verse 7. I abhor the pride of Jacob. You're not going to get it much more directly than that. God says, I hate this stuff. I absolutely hate it. And here's a chapter which causes us to examine our lives very carefully. It's so easy for us, as we said a few minutes ago, to look at these people in Amos chapter 6 and say, what a bunch of wallies. How could they not hear what God was saying? How could they possibly keep walking around with their fingers in their ears when Amos tries all these really imaginative ways of saying, you've got to hear what God is saying to you. So easy to do that, isn't it? Leave this in Amos chapter 6 and say, that belongs over there. It doesn't belong in my life. That's what we often do when we feel challenged. We deflect it away. We say it's for somebody else. It's not for me. And this passage leaves us in no doubt that complacency towards the things of God are not just an undesirable attitude. They will choke the spiritual life out of us. They will kill us spiritually. It's so easy for us to end up in chapter 6 and verse 1, complacent in Zion, comfortable in our faith, self-reliant. So easy for us as a church to have some great programs, which we have, and I'm so thankful for. And some many, many great activities, but it's so easy to move from faith in God to faith in ourselves. It's only a small step. To have more faith in our programs and in our activities than we do in our Almighty God. Verse 13, did we not do this in our own strength? The kind of dangerous, settled complacency that we've been looking at in Amos chapter 6 comes to us as a warning this morning. It reminds us that the Christian faith is not an optional way of life. It is an essential way of life. It challenges our commitment. He says, what's your place in this faith community? Let me press this a bit further this morning. Complacency will affect our desire to be here on a Sunday morning. If we reach the point where we say to ourselves, it doesn't really matter if I'm here or not. That's complacency, isn't it? Now, of course we've got other pressing responsibilities that we need to attend to. But complacency says to us, it doesn't really matter whether I'm here or not on a Sunday morning. I can come and go as I please. It's the same about the teaching of our children and our young people. We've had weeks here where there hardly been any children. What's that all about? Do we not have a sense that our children need to be regularly taught in the things of God? Complacency says, it doesn't matter if I'm not here. It doesn't matter if my children aren't here. Complacency affects the place of praying together as a church. Do we really think that the praying together as a church is left for the spiritual keenies on a Monday afternoon and a Sunday morning? Complacency will affect the weight that we give to God's word this morning. Some of us may look at this morning and say, well, that's for somebody else, but it's not for me. Because that's what complacency does. I don't really care what it says. I'll stick my head in the sand. Complacency will affect our giving, as we were thinking this morning. It will affect our desire to invite other people into our homes. It will affect our vision, helping people follow Jesus. Well, that's a great picture. That's a great series of words. But let's let somebody else get on with it. It doesn't really matter whether I'm involved or not. So complacency does. And in Revelation chapter 3, God says this about his church. I'm not saying he's saying this about Crofton Baptist Church. Do not misunderstand what I'm saying this morning, because what he says to the church in Laodicea essentially is this. He says, I know you inside and out, and I find little to my liking. You're not cold and you're not hot. It would be much better if you were one or the other. You're stale. You're stagnant. And here's what God says. This is how much God hates complacency. He says, I will vomit you out of my mouth. It's strong language, isn't it? And today our country is littered with churches where complacency has taken root and they are no more. My friends, we approach our 60th anniversary next year. That is a significant point for us to consider both the past and the future. And we need to root out things like complacency and self-reliance and pride. God says, I hate the pride of Jacob. Couldn't be any clearer than that this morning. Complacency is a sin against God. Secondly, complacency lures us into a false sense of security. We've already seen that this morning. You look at these people and you think, how could they move away from a God who loves them so much, who's brought them into a promised land and given them everything? The challenge is just as contemporary as it was then. It highlights the way that we twist and we distort our ultimate sense of security in God, and we end up placing it on other things, on our gifts and on our abilities and on our stuff and our position, our possessions, and we have more faith in those things than we do in God. So easy for us to do, isn't it? We only need a little bit of money in the bank and we feel secure. That's how it works. And Jeremiah sums it up very well as he preached to the southern kingdom a little bit later on. He said this, speaking to the nation in terms of words from God. He says, my people have committed a compound sin. They have walked out on me, the fountain of fresh living water. They've walked away from the once true source of life that can give you ultimate satisfaction. And they have built their own cisterns, cisterns that leak. They're nothing better than sieves. So easy to do that. To walk away from the source of the true living water and to start to build our own cisterns, only to discover that actually they leak. Well, does that ring true for some of us this morning? We know where living water is to be found because we hear it preached here Sunday by Sunday by Sunday, don't we? But yet we prefer to build our own cisterns. Challenging stuff, isn't it? But that's what complacency does. It lures us into a false sense of security. And finally this morning, complacency blinds us to the judgment of God. Verse 3, you put off the evil day and you bring near a reign of terror. Ever heard somebody say to you, what do I need God for? Why do I need to be a Christian? Isn't the Christian faith just for people who need a kind of bit of a prop and a support because they can't really cope with life? Maybe there's someone here thinking a little bit like that this morning. You think to yourself, what is the urgency with this stuff? What's the hurry? Let me tell you what that urgency is. Acts chapter 17 says this to us. Speaking about the resurrection of Jesus Christ, God has set a day when the entire human race will be judged and everything will be set right. And he has appointed the judge, confirming him before everyone by raising him, Jesus, from the dead. That's why there's an urgency about this stuff. Because Jesus is returning, not as a baby, but as king and judge. And Amos says this morning, just as he said to the leaders in his day, beware of complacency because it blinds you to the things of God. It allows you to distort the character of God. And you end up thinking, all I want is a God of love. I don't want to consider a God of judgment. So we pick and choose the bits of God's character that we want. And Amos says to us in chapter 6, you can live for the moment, but you can't outrun God. You can live for the moment, but you cannot pretend, because God sees it through it all. And there will come a point of no return, just as it does for the people in Amos chapter 6. And here's the real danger. We can slip into that place without realizing it. So where do we go as we conclude this morning? We go, my friends, to where we always go on a Sunday morning. And even more so this morning, we come to the cross of Jesus Christ. That's the place where our complacency gets dealt with. That's the place where we see just how much God loves us. That's the place where we come where we need that motivation to actually say, Lord, root this stuff out of my life. And because I can come to the cross of Jesus Christ, and because I have faith in Jesus, I discover that the judgment that I deserve falls on Jesus and not on me. That's what Amos says back in a previous chapter that we looked at. He says, here's the answer. Seek God and live. Here's the answer to complacency. Seek good, not evil. Humbly ask for God's grace. As I was preparing during the week, I sensed that God was saying to me, when you preach on Sunday morning, you make sure that you've told people that you've preached this to yourself first. And so I stand before you this morning as somebody who finds myself in Amos chapter 6. Not all the time, but I've been there. And I suspect many of us would say something similar this morning. And I sense God saying to me, when you come to the end of teaching this Sunday morning, you need to offer people the opportunity to respond. And so in a few quiet moments, I'm not going to do anything that embarrasses anybody this morning. So I'm not in the business of doing that. This is about coming to the cross. It's about coming to the place where we find that complacency can be dealt with. Instead of relying on ourselves, we look at Jesus and we think to ourselves, here is the source of living water. Let's stop depending on our own gifts and our own abilities and reaffirm our faith in Jesus Christ. So I'm not going to ask all of you to stand. We're going to be quiet for a few moments. And then after a few moments, I'm going to invite you to stand. If you have found yourself somewhere in Amos chapter 6 this morning, and know this, I will be standing with you. And then I'll lead you in a prayer of confession and faith in Jesus Christ. And we come and we say, Lord, have mercy on us. Root this stuff out of our lives. So firstly, some quiet moments before God. And then I'm going to lead you in a prayer.